Shvius Perikei, Mishnah Tess, the last of the Perik, and the last of the theme of Misael Devar Avera. Here we're going to go even further in leniencies, and we're going to say these are, you know, far out cases, but for the sake of promoting peace, we will let you do things that are really pretty dubious. So the case here is Mash'elis Isha L'chaverta HaChashuda Ala Shvius. You have two neighbors, let's call one of them the Rebbetzin, who is good about keeping Shemitah, and the next door neighbor who is really likely and suspected of being someone who doesn't keep Shemitah properly at all. So the case is, according to Bar Tanura, let's say she's asking for some bread-making, you know, implement, and the time of Bior is now past, and the assumption is that she didn't, if you recall, Bior means she'd have to take that flour or grain, whatever it is, from Shemitah, and take it out of her house and make it Hefker, let's say, according to the Rambam, he had to destroy it, whatever the case is. This Rebbetzin is afraid that, or she's concerned, and she has a reasonable belief that the neighbor, notwithstanding that the time of Bior has passed, has still kept the food in her house, and now intends to eat this flour as bread, even though it's forbidden to do so. So the case is that the neighbor now asks for the some sort of tool to help make the bread. May the Rebbetzin, as I'm calling her here, get involved? And the answer is yes, she can to some degree, for the sake of promoting peace, because if the woman, the Rebbetzin, would refuse to lend her neighbor some tool, that would be a major affront to the woman, and of course it would really breed a lot of ill will, and we don't want that. So we're going to really rely, like grasp at straws, and think maybe some outlying possibility is occurring here that's permissible, and relying on that permissible, you know, far-out assumption, we will, we'll ascribe the neighbor's desire for this implement on something that's, to something that's permissible, even if it's kind of far out, so that we will, you know, not have to make enmity between the Rebbetzin and her neighbor. So, Mash'elis Isha L'chaverta Chashud Al Shvius, a woman, in our case, we're calling her the Rebbetzin, may lend to Chaverta, her friend, we'll call her the neighbor. Even though the neighbor is Chashud Al Shvius, the neighbor is really suspected of being someone who doesn't keep Shemitah properly, so, and it's, say, past Zman Bior, so to give her these tools would be really to help her do something that's usher, probably. Even so, we are lenient, and we let the Rebbetzin lend her Nafa. Nafa is a sifter. Kavara. Kavara is a sieve. Nafa for like flour, and Kavara, sieve is like for like the larger, you know, grains. Verechayim. A rechayim is like a hand grinder to take the wheat kernels and grind it into flour. And a tanur. A tanur is an oven for baking the bread. So we will let the Rebbetzin give her these things, even though the normal use for all these tools is to make bread, and presumably the bread is forbidden because it's past beer, etc. But we'll assume the best. So the Bar Tanura says, for example, the Nafa, why does she want to borrow this sifter? She needs it for some kind of like counting money, perhaps. And the Kavara, the sifter, she needs it similarly for like, I don't know, doing something with sand. And the Rechaim, the grinder, maybe she needs to grind, not flour, but she wants to grind, you know, spices. And the Tanur, the oven, maybe she doesn't want to bake bread. Instead of baking bread, she intends to use the oven for, you know, drying out and bleaching flax to make linen. So these are possible things, even if they're far out, and the Rebbetzin will rely on these far out possibilities rather than stir up the pot and make really ill will between her and her neighbor. However, that's as far as it goes. The Rebbetzin can't actually roll up her sleeve, so to speak, and participate in the production of this bread. That's going too far, because that's really facilitating the neighbor for doing an avera. Here you're just giving her the tool, which is much less. But to actually to do it with her would be forbidden, and therefore it says, aval, however, lo savor. Lo tavor means that the Rebbetzin may not actually, like from borer sort, so she might participate in the sifting process, let's say. Lo titchan, tchina means to grind, like tchina is, in Hebrew today, tchina is ground up sesame seeds. Tochen, like one of the Lamatas Malachas, is grinding. So, velo titchan ima, the Rebbetzin may not do the grinding of the flour with her neighbor, because that's really just going too far and facilitating the neighbor to be mechalel, to break Shemitah. Okay, so that's part one. Part two of the Mishnah has nothing at all to do with Shemitah, at all. This is a totally different din. It has to do with Tumah and Tahara. So the reason why it's brought here is because it's the same principles at work. We're asking about, we have the Rebbetzin, and she is an Eishes Chaver. She is strict about keeping tum and tahar properly. And to be someone called a chaver or an eshes chaver, it requires this sort of a formal acceptance in a training period on keeping everything totally tahor. And anyone who hasn't done that is called an am haaretz. Am haaretz here meaning someone who just simply is a regular Jew who didn't take on this formal acceptance or get this formal training, etc., and therefore is assumed to be tame. Even a well-meaning, educated am haaretz is considered to be tame because the rules of tumah tahara are so complicated. So now there's no reason, there's no real prohibition, let's say this is the din, in making food tame. That's not an issue. So in help giving the woman, the Rebbetzin gives her neighbor tools that she'll end up using to make food that's tame or making the utensils tame. So that's no big deal. As far as the food goes, so the neighbor can eat the food that's tame. So what? And as far as the utensils go, good. So the halacha will be when the Rebbetzin gets her sifter back, she'll have to put the sifter in the mikvah, make it tahor again. That's all fine. The issue is that if you're making dough, so what happens is, while it's raw, unground wheat, the wheat's not susceptible to tumah. And even if the next door neighbor is totally tameah, she's a nida, if she touches the wheat, so what? The wheat remains tahor, because foodstuffs are only makabel tumah, they only can become tame once they have hechsher, once they are ready to become tame, which requires them to be wetted in a, let's call it willful way, b'chiyutan, they're wetted by one of the seven machshirin, the seven liquids that enable some foods to become tumah susceptible. So those are the, we'll call them the yad, shachat, dam liquids, seven liquids for later, not for now, including water. So that means when you're making dough, so while you're grinding the flour remains tahor no matter what. But as soon as the flour gets wet, when you add water to the flour to make the dough, now it's totally tumah susceptible. And you'll be making the dough tameh as soon as you, the tameh person, touches the dough or it touches the pot, which or the sifter or the rechaim, the grinder, whatever it is, the bowl that it's being made in. As soon as the dough that's now water and flour together touches any tameh utensil, then the food will become tameh also. And although it's not a problem to make the food tameh per se, it is a problem to make challah, as in hafrashas challah, the tithe of dough that goes to the kohanim. It is a problem to make that tummy. It's forbidden from the Torah to do so. So you have the issue here in our Mishnah is, if you have the Rebbetzin, as I'm calling her, lend a utensil to the neighbor who's an am haaretz. She doesn't keep tumah tahara properly necessarily. So it's very reasonable to assume, and the halacha makes the Rebbetzin assume, that the dough will become tameh, and therefore the challah, the hafreshes challah, the separation of the challah, the gift of challah from the dough that goes to the kohen, will be tameh, and that's an issur from the Torah. So our Mishnah here in the second part is concerned with the question of, is the Rebbetzin, we'll call her, who's the Eishes Chaver, she keeps tumah tahara properly, allowed to help her neighbor make dough, when inevitably what's going to happen is the challah from the dough will become tummy. We're not concerned, by the way, I misspoke, but we're not concerned about truma or maestress, because if you remember from Maseches Demai, we can assume that most amayar do tithe properly, and even the ones that don't, they do take the truma out, and the maestress, anyway, is not a problem. It's not a problem of becoming tummy, really, but there is an absolute problem of challah becoming tummy, and there's no obligation, there's no possibility that challah could have been taken before. It only, the obligation to take challah only kicks in once the dough exists. So it's certainly a potential problem of challah, and the amar is going to make a tummy, and the Rebbetzin has to assume it will become tummy, and therefore the question is, how much can she get involved when she knows full well, in the end of the day, this neighbor is going to make tummy challah, which is against the Torah. Again, when I say tummy challah, I don't mean challah for Shabbos, I mean tafrashas challah, the challah separation of dough for the Kohen. So the Mishnah here says, Eishas chaver, the wife of the chaver, meaning she's strict about keeping tumah tahara. Mash'elis le'eshes am ha'aretz. She is allowed to lend to her neighbor, as I'm calling her, who's an am ha'aretz. A nafan, a kavara, a sieve, and a sifter, I should say, and a sieve. Yes, she may lend those. The Mishnah doesn't list the other two items because the rechayim and the tanur are just incredibly difficult to, or in the case, incredibly difficult in the case of the rechayim, and impossible in the case of the tanur, to become tahor again. So let's say, if the Rebbetzin would lend her neighbor her portable oven. Tanurim actually were portable. The problem is when the Rebbetzin gets her tanur back, she has to assume the tanur has become tamei. And since the tanur, the oven, is made out of klei cheres, that's earthenware, there's no way to ever make it tahor again. And so it's ruined as far as the Rebbetzin's concerned. So therefore, we don't obligate her to lend ovens. That would make her never get it back again. As far as the rechaim goes, the hand mill, the grinding utensil, that could go into the mikvah and become tahor again, but it's kind of like cleaning for Pesach. You'd have to remove every bit of ground in, you know, dough that's been smushed into the grinding bowl, which is incredibly difficult to do, and therefore, because before you put the rechaim, the mill, into the mikvah, you have to clean it out thoroughly so there's nothing else on the mill, so that when it gets immersed in the mikvah, there's no chatzitza, there's nothing on the mill. Is the case when you put anything in the mikvah, it needs to be totally cleaned off first. And since it's incredibly difficult to do that, so, you know, to clean a rechaim fully, we don't obligate the neighbor, the Rebbetzin, to give the neighbor her rechaim. But the point is, where it is possible to get it back and clean it up, like the naf and the kavara, we do allow and encourage the Rebbetzin to lend to her neighbor, even though she knows the neighbor's going to ultimately produce challah, which is going to be tamea, because, again, we'll see for peace. But we do limit the Rebbetzin's involvement. We do let the Rebbetzin uvoreres v'tochenes umrakedes ima. Unlike the previous Mishnah, a previous half of the Mishnah, where we said the Rebbetzin shouldn't do the acts of grinding and sorting, etc., with the neighbor, because we're afraid of Shemitah produce, and that would be facilitating directly with her own hands the Avera. Here, there's no problem at all with doing borer, you know, sorting out the rocks from the flour, whatever it is, and tchina, grinding the flour, merakedes, sifting the flour. That's no problem. And the Amma Arts woman can do it. We're talking about non-Shemitah year. Can do it, no problem. There's no problem doing that with her. However, the problem is once the water's been added. So once the water's been added, aval, however, mishiyatel hamayim, once you pour water, once the neighbor poured water into the flour to make the dough, lo siga etzla, no longer can the Rebbetzin get her hands dirty with it at all? She'en machzik nidei ovrei avera, because you're not allowed to actually directly help someone doing an avera, and the avera is now kicking in full force once the dough has become water and flour together, or maybe when you knead the water and flour together, because at that point it's too much susceptible and you'll make the challah tummy. Bechulan, and in all these cases, meaning all the leniences we say where we're allowing the Rebbetzin to lend stuff and participate, where we are really likely that something bad's going to come out of it. Lo amru elam mipnei darkei shalom. Because of darkei shalom, we want to promote peace. And as I said in the end of the previous parak, at length, darkei shalom means not just so bad things shouldn't happen and bad feeling, but actually to promote happiness. As the pasuk says, darkei darkei noam. The ways of the Torah are all noam, are all pleasant. V'chol nesivo se'a shalom, and its pathways are peace promoting. So we want to promote peace. So therefore, we're going to sort of be as lenient as possible for the sake of making peace and having peaceful relations between fellow Jews. And not only fellow Jews, the Mishnah goes on to say, "Umachazikin yedei nochre b'shvias." You can literally mean strengthen the hands, but it means you can encourage a nochri, a non-Jew on shvias in the Shemitah year, who you see working his fields, because he's allowed to do it, of course. Avaloi de Yisrael, you can't encourage a Jew. That goes without saying. I explained this actually in the previous parak. We're talking about a Jew who's plowing because he's allowed to plow because of taxes that are put upon him, that he risks, the Jews were at risk of their lives. They didn't plow. So they had to plow to meet the tax requirements of the Romans, but not more than that. So even though it's permissible to do, you don't encourage a Jew to do it. V'sholin b'shloman, and the Mishnah says exactly the same as in the previous parak. You are allowed to inquire after well-being. You're allowed to be friendly, and you should be friendly and cordial to your non-Jewish fellow persons in Eretz Yisrael, but be darkei shalom for the sake of promoting peace. Not, as I said last time, not because of mipnei eva, because we're afraid of bad things happening, we don't trust them, and really make her, like, really, ideally, you shouldn't be friendly. This is not the pshat. You shouldn't be freely friendly except bad things will happen, so you have to protect Jews. No, no, no. The pshat is we want peace, and proper peaceful relations require politeness and friendliness, and therefore it is proper indeed to greet a non-Jew, etc., anytime during Shemitah or otherwise.